Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Holtcast. Cole Pettum here as always, and we're here to attempt to talk about, I really should say, Brighton 0, Aston Villa 0. I still don't think the Villa side has shown up at the Amex Stadium. We're still waiting for their arrival based on that lackluster performance, and somehow we still ended up with a point all thanks to Emi Martinez. So maybe I should say Brighton 0, Emi Martinez FC 0 as well. But anyways, of course, we have two guests as always. I'll go to Danny Raza first. So Danny, how you doing?
Bro, just like after the game yesterday, I'm feeling pretty fatigued. I'm feeling pretty tired. That's the truthfulness. Villa give me a bit of energy. Either they perk me up or they make me rage. Right now, Cole, I just want to feel something because I'm not feeling anything right now.
Fair enough. And I mean, we always kind of had to schedule podcasts around how we're feeling. It definitely applies to Danny because I messaged him on Saturday, of course, after the game asking, well, do you want to do it tonight? Let's just get this over with. I don't want to do this tomorrow. I'm exhausted after that. It's just like, yeah, fair enough. I mean, how many nil-nil podcasts probably went out last night about that anyway? So we'll be trendsetters and go for the Monday uploads as usual. So hopefully you guys enjoy that. But of course, it's a party of three today. I'll say it PG this time. I won't call it a threesome or a three-way. But nonetheless, it's Simon O'Regan. Simon, how you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Still disappointed from that result last night, but having had the chance to sort of calm down a bit, I'm a bit more philosophical about it than maybe Daniel is still at the moment.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, if anyone's looking for general history on this fixture, it's definitely not one that's kind of glorified since probably 1981 based off this stat. So basically, in the last seven league games in which Brighton have hosted Villa, have hosted Villa, there's been only eight goals scored in total, with neither side managing to score more than one goal in a single game during this run. So one win each, five draws. Glad I finally got that in my app, but nonetheless, yeah, all these stats just kind of, maybe I should have looked at this before the game even happened, because it just doesn't seem a promising one. And Danny, I'll come to you first, because Brighton, to be fair to them, I mean, like, I'll be blunt, they probably deserve to win, and it's kind of easy for me to say that. They're on a good run. I don't think they've lost since, I think it was early December. And I think they're one of these teams we're looking at going, you know what, if they had a few more key pieces, they could definitely probably be upper mid-table, you could arguably say, based on the style of football and how they play. But I guess just to try to go over the whole game kind of in one piece here, what were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, look, Brighton played well. They played good football, but I can't hide away from the fact that we just didn't even bother to test their defense. Like, that's it at the end of the day. You know, Brighton did play well. They played good football. Their chances weren't amazing. I mean, that's down to our defense, and that's down to our goalkeeper as well, to be fair, like saving whatever shots they did have. But, you know, they weren't up and at us like a Leeds United or a Manchester City would have been. You know, those are the kinds of sides that if Villa turned up and played like the way they did, you know, be getting destroyed. You know, thankfully for Villa, I think when you look at Brighton's attack, I still think they almost felt a little bit detached from their midfield. You know, they had a lot of possession. They were, you know, testing the defense quite a lot. But in general, I just thought they weren't massively potent. You know, like coming close to the end of the game as well, I didn't actually feel like Brighton were going to score. I was a little bit scared, but I didn't really think they were going to. And I think that's it for me, really. It's just that Brighton were there. They gave a good performance, you know, a team that are in form. And you can see they're in form because, you know, a few of those players had a chip on their shoulders. You know, you look at guys like McAllister, you look at, you know, Dan Burn, I thought was very good. Surprisingly, I was not expecting that guy to be as technically skilled as he was. I wasn't expecting him darting forward the way he was either. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, it deserved a little bit more performance from Villa. And at the end of the day, there was only one team there.
Yeah, and the funny thing about Dan Burn, I think that was like his 50th appearance for Brighton or something like that. And I don't know how many times the commentators brought that up. And you know, when they do, they're just hoping he gets an assist or he scores a goal or something kind of monumental to mark that occasion for him. And to be fair, he obviously had one that Emi Martinez made a fantastic save from that header. And then you had one, which was just a typical defender's kind of attempt on goal from pretty far outside the box, I guess you could say. But Simon, I'll come to you. How you feeling about this one? And I guess more so, what do you chalk this kind of lackluster performance to? Like, do you think it's a one-off? Where do you sit with it?
Part of me would like to think it was just a bit of a one-off. I mean, it's hard to say, really. From Brighton's point of view, that game, it sort of summed up their season. I think, really, they've played quite well for the majority of the year, but they just don't have goal scorers. And that's sort of the main difference, really. If they had a goal scorer, they probably would have won that game. And they'd have won a few more this season. For Villa, it's really disappointing, obviously. Going forward, it's very rare this season, if at all, you can say that we've offered nothing going forward. Like, even in the Leeds game when we lost, you know, there were still a few chances that we created in that game. Man City, we had a few chances away as well. So it's just really disappointing. And there shouldn't really be an excuse, because they had a week off to prepare. So it's not like you could say that they should have been tired, but that front four just did look so tired, and we gave the ball away so much. But I think Dan made a good point about, you look at Brighton's chances, other than that header from Burn, which he mentioned, all their other shots, I kind of would have expected Martinez to save them anyway. Like, he did well to save them, don't get me wrong. Like, I don't think I'd have saved some of them, but a keep of his quality. I think it was only really that Dan Burn chance where you say that was an outstanding save. The others, you kind of expect them to, but it's just disappointing, the amount of opportunities we gave Brighton throughout the game. I mean, I think they had 26 efforts over the 90 minutes, which is far too many. And to come away with a clean sheet from those amount of shots on goal is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I think there was one more save. I think it was either a Trossard or a McAllister shot that was deflected, and Emi dove the right way and it hit his hip. I mean, a bit of luck. Pardon?
Was it a free kick?
I think it was a rebound from a free kick, I think. Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's a few of those. I don't know how many times we gave away the ball on the edge of our box. It's just, it's really frustrating. And let's talk about this right now, because I feel so bad for this man, Marvelson Akamba. What does he have to do to get more than one game in a row into this side? He has done nothing wrong. He has the highest pass percentage and the highest numbers, smaller game size. I think he's only featured 7 times this season or something like that in total. But like, what does he have to do to get in the side, Danny? Because you look at Brighton in particular, they're a side that likes to press. They like to kind of put you into that trap and move forward. And we saw how much we struggled with the top four moving the ball around. We just couldn't get that fluidity done today, or yesterday, I guess you could say, because you'll hear that, or 2 days ago, I guess you could say, because you'll hear this on Monday. We're recording on Sunday, if I get my days right. But what do we have to do to get this man in the side? Do we have to have a petition? Like, it's getting a little ridiculous.
I think the issue is you've got McGinn and Louise, who almost have been guaranteed starters at the start of the season. And then you've got Barkley, who almost seems to like not be able to do anything wrong in a way. Like, it's almost as though, you know, he's getting caps and getting in the team every week for reasons like, well, it almost seems like we have Barkley in there for what he can do rather than what he has been doing. I don't want this to turn into a massive criticism of everybody, but at the end of the day, when Nakamba came in for Douglas Luiz, when Nakamba came in for John McGinn, we won the game, right? When Nakamba came in for Douglas Luiz, we also won. And it almost feels like we had better control of our midfield. Am I right in saying that? Was Nakamba in for McGinn? Was it Newcastle?
Yeah, because he was suspended.
Yeah. So it's almost just like, you know, he comes in, has a good game. And I think people were worried that he's not quite the passer. You know, he hasn't got quite the same sort of technical ability. Well, I don't think that's true. Yeah, he hasn't got a shot on him. But, you know, Douglas Luiz hasn't scored from long range all season. I don't think McGinn's been scoring many this season either. This isn't a criticism of McGinn and Luiz, but I've been, you know, we've been talking about this. We have not had an awful lot of time on the ball. And when we haven't got an awful lot of time on the ball, I would rather somebody like Nakamba go in there just to make things a little bit more solid, just to have somebody who has a bit more energy in that midfield. And yeah, I just think that it was a shame that he didn't play. I mean, I also thought that maybe we needed to go with three in midfield rather than Barkley up top with Watkins. But again, we have this rigid structure. We have this rigid sort of way that Dean Smith wants to play, and we don't move away from that. And I guess that's okay until you need a plan B. And you know, we weren't outplayed in the second half in the Villa game. We were outplayed the entire game. Like, it was pretty clear from early on in that game that Brighton were just all over us. And part of that was due to the fact we had no grip in midfield. I'm getting a little bit worried now because it seems to be becoming a bit of a pattern with McGinn and Louise now. You know, two massively talented midfielders, don't get me wrong. But it seems to be a bit of a pattern in recent weeks. We have no grip in midfield whatsoever.
Yeah, and see, that's where, honestly, when I was kind of thinking ahead of this game, I was kind of hoping it would be Nakamba, Louise, and I guess from there, maybe you'd probably put Ross Barkley just ahead of them. But I thought, you know what, McGinn's looked a little shaky the last few weeks, and maybe it's the way he runs. He always looks tired. Maybe that's just how he runs.
What was it I mentioned to you about McGinn yesterday? He's like playing on the other
side.
He was
playing
on
the left a lot. He always plays on the right. Yeah. He was forced. Well, I mean, that was kind of just the way Brighton set up, really. You looked at Grealish. He was trying to get away from Veltman so much, and Veltman, to his credit, did a fantastic job yesterday. So I guess there's that. He moved to the right. You had Birdie moving to the left, and then they swapped it just because it didn't work still. It's pretty easy to recognize those things after a couple minutes of the opposition team, especially when things aren't going your way. And then you just look at the midfield, and I think we've seen this kind of, you could say, maybe in the Southampton game, a few other ones this season as well, where we just, I guess, long story short, we don't do well against teams that press us, and we still haven't figured that out. We go to Arsenal, we play Liverpool, anything top side related, it seems we do well because we know they're going to have a lot of the ball. They're not going to press us. They're going to try to just strangle us with possession, and we do well. We don't do well when there's extreme pressure. You look at Leeds. I mean, even that game, though, I guess you could say if Grealish scored, that could have been a whole different story as well. But I don't know. These next two games make me really nervous because you have Leicester and then you have Leeds. I don't really know what to expect going forward. But Simon, what are your thoughts? Do you think anything kind of needs to change going into the next game?
It's a tough one for me with Nakamba because I get, obviously, he played really well against Arsenal. But I do understand why Luiz was brought back in because Nakamba does sort of, he keeps the ball ticking over quite nicely with short passes, but he doesn't have that long passing range that Luiz does have. So I can see why Luiz was brought back in. Going forward, it's difficult to say really because was that game just a complete one-off or is it something that's going to, you know, filter into the performances over the next few weeks? Like, I think obviously we've got Leicester coming up next. I wouldn't be surprised if Nakamba came in for that because I think you need to have someone stopping James Maddison, really. And I think Nakamba's probably going to be a bit more disciplined in that. I don't know. It was just to say it's a tough one to sort of put your finger on how do you improve it? Because, you know, the week before against Arsenal, okay, we only got the one goal, but we still had sort of a few decent chances on the break with that front four moving the ball quickly. So I think Barkley needs to do a bit more. I thought some of the criticism was a little over the top that he got last night. Like, don't get me wrong, he didn't play well, but I don't think any of that front four did. So I thought it was a bit unfair for him to get singled out. But I don't think he could have too many complaints if he's taken out the team for next week.
Yeah, and Danny, I'll come right back to you. And I think this is kind of just a mentality thing and maybe just our mindset as fans given this season, given the rapid success we've had. Do you think, and I mean literally at time of recording on Sunday, Everton are losing 2-0 to Fulham, so they're in seventh. We're sitting in eighth. I mean, we're on 36 points. We're above Tottenham. We're above Arsenal. Wolves, Leeds, a bunch of other teams, of course. We're, of course, West Ham play on the Monday. If they lose, we're only 3 points off them for sixth. Chelsea are on the same amount of points at 39. Liverpool are fourth at 40. Like, we're literally 4 points off of fourth. And I think we're getting into that point of the season where we have to be careful as fans of, I don't want to be saying expecting too much, but do you know what I mean, Danny? We're kind of guiding that, we're kind of going over that line of, well, you know what? Look at last season to this season. Like, should we not just be happy realistically with whatever happens at top 10 finish?
We're not complaining.
No, but
I get that. I get that. But, you know, with increased responsibility, Spider-Man once said, with great power comes great responsibility, right? This team has a great amount of power right now to do something special. And I think we can all see that. We know that there's talent in this team that can take Villa to Europe. Am I expecting it? No. But we can't compare this Villa side to the team from last season. We can't measure them on this. We're not battling relegation. You know, this is about what's the next step for Villa. We were playing some beautiful football pre the whole COVID crisis at Villa. Right now, it's about what's changed. Why aren't we still playing that football? It's good in a sense that we have gotten solid. You know, we got outplayed. We got played out of our socks by Brighton. But we outplayed them in the last game we played against them. And we didn't get the points, right? But still, you know, we outplayed. What was different this time round? Our performance levels dropping. It looks like they might be. But that said, Cole, I'm just, you know, measuring stick and all of that. You're right. Everton right now are getting destroyed by Fulham. This is a podcast which is going to go out after that game. But and they're probably going to come back and win 3-2. But, you know, it's good to see Emi Martinez being praised under pressure. It's good to see the defense being praised under pressure. It's good to see, look, we were out here, you know, maybe worrying about Tyrone Mings and his performance levels a few weeks ago. That man's been one of Villa's top performers in the last few weeks. Those mistakes have been cut out. Right. And, you know, as I say, you know, this team, they've got massive resistance. They're doing well to kind of still be up there and still be picking up points, even when we're not playing great. But these performance levels, they're not good enough. Right. And if the defense, you know, has a lack of confidence at some point or whatever, it could come apart. It's precious. Football's very, very precious. It's very sort of, if one of the cogs doesn't work, you can see the entire team could go off the rails. We don't want that for Villa. We don't want them to whimper off. We don't want them to kind of like end up in free fall in 12th, 13th, 14th. We want to see this team execute what they can. Do you know what I mean? We want to see them grab the proverbial bull by the horns. That's what I'm trying to say. And I understand this isn't a massive rallying speech, but and I understand I'm very tired, Cole, and I don't know where my train of thought's going. But I'm just saying that the criticism from fans that the team is getting, I don't think is massive. I don't think it's negative. I think it's just, we're just asking questions.
But what points total would you be happy with, realistically, at this point? I mean, I think a lot of, especially going into this season, we're thinking, you know what, we'll probably take 40 points. And I think that was just based on how last season was.
I don't work on points totals, Cole. I work on positions. I work on positions. I want
tactical finesse.
Yeah, exactly. I want Villa to be above Leeds. I want them to be above West Ham. They probably won't finish above West Ham, possible. But I want Villa to be in and amongst the Tottenhams and the Evertons and the Leicesters and not the Arsenals and the Manchester Uniteds. That's where I want to see Villa, in and around. But I'm not expecting anything of them. I'm just hoping. That's all.
Fair enough. I mean, to be fair, David Moyes always has a slide in him somehow, so I wouldn't be shocked if they kind of fell down a little bit, but we can always hope. We hopefully pick up and other people fall down, but that's the reality of it. Simon, I'll come to you. Different kind of topic. And I mean, of course, we saw Matty Target go off with a hamstring injury, of course, and Elmo came on, King Elmo, of course. And now people on Twitter and social media are freaking out, thinking, well, why did you get rid of Gilbert? What are you doing? Like in my mind, I'm sitting there going, how can you forecast this ever happening? First of all, the whole mentality of people just thinking players are robots and they just, oh, this one's broken. Pull the other one out of the drawer. We can use this one. But like, what are your thoughts and I guess confidence levels if Elmo has to take over for, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks, a month?
I've got no problem with Elmo. I'm a big fan of his. Like amongst my friends, it's quite a big joke that I'm like his number one fan or something. And I'm not quite that far. It's because I once said he's not that bad. And all of a sudden that made me seem crazy. But I think he's a decent player. Like, okay, he's nothing special, but he's solid and he'll do a decent job. I mean, he came in, I think it was Burnley at home and Cash was suspended. And he did a perfectly good job. So I don't get why people be so annoyed at that. You know, he's never really let us down. And as a second choice right back, you know, you could do a lot worse. So, yeah, I've got no real problem with Elmo if he's got to step in for a bit.
Yeah, sorry. I was just coughing. If these guys can see my camera because my water went down the wrong tube and I'm dying here in the background. So, okay. All good now. But yeah, I think it's an interesting one because, I mean, to be fair, don't feel bad because another man in this group, Danny Raza, has also been made fun of in the past for saying someone's not that bad. And that man was Wesley. And then me and James used to say he had a man crush on him. So if you're an OG listener to the podcast, you'll know what I'm talking about as Danny sits there with no expression on his face.
To be fair, he hasn't scored in over a year.
Yeah, true. Useless. Anyways, let's go to Twitter here because, of course, after every game, I asked for your thoughts. We did something a little bit different this time. Asked for your three-word summaries, and I don't know if this is just the performance and the game yesterday or if people just like to do this way more, but we had 95 people tweet in. There are three-word responses. A lot were explicit, so I might have to use that tag on this one, but I'll try to read about maybe 5 to 8 of these right now. But let's start with Phil. He says a bit flat. Sue Mason says we're still 8th. Tom Jones, dreadful besides Martinez. Dale O'Sullivan, buggered in Brighton. Let's go to Stephen Phillips saying great defensive performance. Anthony Aguis saying effing dog shit. I guess I could have said fucking dog shit because I said shit, so whatever. We are allowed to swear on this podcast from time to time, so if you don't like it, close your ears, please. Robert Parker.
Paul makes the rules.
Yes, I do, of course. Robert Parker says out of jail. Paul Pierce says the 3 P's, piss, poor performance. There was a really good one yesterday if I could find it. Aston Arias says well below par, and we'll finish with Louisville Lions, yikes, get better. There was a few other ones. I mean, there's 95 of these. I appreciate all the support. Of course, we'll do it again, and hopefully we get a similar response because that was brilliant, and my phone was going absolutely mental after the game. So always appreciate it. You can tweet us at 7500 to Holt. So, Danny, I'll come back to you. I mean, I guess to kind of wrap this all up, and I mean, this hasn't been maybe the most informative podcast, but I don't know essentially how you make a nil-nil into a barn-burning segment. But moving forward into Leicester, into Leeds, what's your mindset going into these? Where do you think we can kind of take this result and move on from?
Do you want me to be honest?
Yeah, that's what it's about.
0 points. I'm saying it right now, and I'm not trying to be negative. I'm trying to put my football hat on. I've seen nothing from Villa to suggest that they can go up and put up anything against Leeds or Leicester, right? Villa's defense, brilliant, but against Leicester, who we did beat earlier on in the season when we were playing a little more free flowing, and we were, you know, and Grealish, Barkley, it wasn't Bertrand back then; it was Trezeguet, Watkins as well. You know, it almost seemed like earlier on in the season had a little bit more space. What we've seen recently is that Barkley's not performing. Bertrand's finding it a little bit more difficult. Grealish is being crowded and hounded. And that is taking everything out of Villa's attack. There is not a plan B. Brendan Rodgers and Marcelo Bielsa are far too good as tacticians to have not seen how Villa play their football and not have a plan for it. I'm just I'm just a little bit unconfident considering how Villa have played recently. We beat Southampton because Southampton have been on a terrible run. We beat Newcastle because they, again, just not all there. You know, the less said about Steve Bruce's tactics, the better. We beat Arsenal because they, again, you know, they've had the nickname of Banter FC as of late. You never know what's going to happen with them. Leicester and Leeds United will run their socks off. And I'm not seeing any cohesion amongst Villa's midfield and their attack at the moment. And because of that, I think there's going to be issues. Now, if the defense can hold up, Villa can get an early goal in either of these games, then we'll wait and see. But they're going to need to put up a hell of a lot more fight than they did against Brighton. Because that performance, the recent performances, Leeds and Leicester, they'll eat that all up.
Yeah, and I think the thing that kind of stuck out most with what you said was as soon as Grealish is basically cut out, we're screwed. And that's what we saw a lot of last season. And it's sort, I don't want to commit to fully saying it, but it sort of feels like we're falling into that a little bit. Definitely of late, definitely during that fixture congestion. It, like, I don't know, that concerns me a little bit. I don't know. I think there just needs to be a little few tactical changes. Maybe helps with the mindset. Maybe bring Trez back in, because I feel like offensively we're losing a little bit of that hardworking grit that we just had so much composure with when you had Trez in there, when the likes of El Ghazi was doing well. And I think it was December. I just think new mindset, new ideas, it needs to come in. But Simon, I guess before actually we'll have to get to our match balls, because I forgot that, of course, and then we'll wrap things up. But
is there any point of that call, first of all? Like, is there actually any point in doing the match balls?
We might as well. We might as well.
do you not already know? Right, I'm not going to spoil it.
Yes, we won't. It's the biggest surprise since the, I don't know, the Chinese wall. I don't know. The Berlin Wall.
Sorry, the what? The Chinese Wall?
You know what I mean. The Great Wall of China. Jesus. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Well, anyway. A surprise call. I'm pretty sure it took them a long time to make it. Anyway.
Yeah, apparently you can see it from space. But but anyways, Simon, what are your thoughts on this? Take it away, because me and Danny are just chatting absolute nonsense right now.
The Leicester game does worry me. I must say that. Obviously, the form they're in is great, and as good as we've been defensively, just Jamie Vardy just always terrifies me when he's playing, because he's just so good and he seems to find space in behind defences, and Maddison and Tiedemann are capable of finding him in that space. So that game does worry me a bit. The Leeds game, it's a real toss of a coin, because you don't know what you're going to get with them. I mean, they were so bad in that first 45 minutes against Arsenal today. Which shouldn't be so much of a surprise, because they can't defend. Leeds haven't been able to defend all season. Only West Brom have conceded more goals than them this year. So that's the game that, if the front four can get going again, then there's goals in it. Although I would bring Trezeguet back in for that game, because just because of how Leeds play, they're so gung-ho going forward. And Trezeguet is obviously going to give you more work rate going back than Traore. He's not got anywhere near, for me, the level of quality going forward that Troy has. But his work rate, you know, you can't knock that. So I'd probably bring him back in for that Leeds game. But yeah, so the Leicester game, I think if we can get a point out of that, you take that, you'd be happy with. And then the Leeds game, like, it could be 3-0 either way. Like, just they're the one team that you just cannot predict what's going to happen in their game. So they can get battered 3-4-5. Or they can batter someone 3-4-5. So it's a tough one to call that one. If they haven't got Calvin Phillips, it gives us a much better chance, because they seem to fall apart without him sort of dictating things there. So I have to wait and see on that one, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Arsenal game, of course, 4-2. And without, well, it's 3-0 at halftime, 4-0, and then ended up being 4-2. It could have been easily 6-2 or gone the other way. That was a bit of a mental one. But long story short, you can see what their midfield becomes as soon as they lose someone as important as that. Of course, you could kind of compare that to some of, well, basically Villa losing some of our players as well. But no explanations when I ask these questions, just quick fire answers. Danny, I want to know, who is your man of the match? And how many points are we getting out of Leicester and Leeds?
Emi Martinez was man of the match. And I'm making myself enemy of state right here. 0 points out of Leicester and Leeds. I would love to be proven wrong. But that's my prediction, and that's my match ball, Emi Martinez.
Fair enough. Simon, how about you?
Martinez, that would be no surprise to anyone, I'm sure. And I think we're going to get 3 points. I don't know which one we'll beat, but I think we will beat one of them.
Fair enough. I'm going to go a bit different for the match. Well, I'm just kidding. Emi Martinez. Anyone else played absolutely piss poor yesterday, in my opinion. It has to be Emi. I mean, 12 clean sheets, I believe it is now, is absolutely unreal. I can't remember the last time we had that many clean sheets at this point in the season, if that's even possible to remember. He's unreal. He's a steal. And yeah, that's all I can really say about that. I guess I wasn't supposed to kind of explain it, but I did anyway, so I broke my own rule. But nonetheless, for points against Leicester and Leeds, I'm going to go with 3. I think we're going to get a win. I just don't know which one. Maybe it won't be deserved. For honest reasons, I don't know why I feel more confident against Leicester than I do Leeds, but maybe that's just me being foolish. But anyways, guys, let's wrap it up there. Thank you very much to Danny and to Simon for joining me. If you want to find Danny on Twitter, it's at RazzaJourno. If you want to find Simon on Twitter, it's at Cy O'Regan. If you want to find me, Cole Pettum, on Twitter, it's at TalkAstonVilla. We'll leave it there. Of course, you can tweet the team at 7500Holt. You can email the podcast if you want to do so at holtcast@gmail.com. Hopefully some positive results coming up. We'll be back for the preview against Leicester. And don't forget, up the Villa.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.